From Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
It is Tuesday morning, August 9th. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We are visiting with UW professor Michael Wagner, also a director of graduate studies at Madison's School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And the areas in which you study, to me would be like, if only I could go back to, if I went back to college, what you've studied, essentially, it's a course catalog in all the different ways that we measure journalism's impact on democracy, its effect on its viewers, frankly, its effect on itself, whether it's partisan issue framing, how people connect their religious views to their political preferences, brand content journalism, the influence of public opinion polls on public opinion itself, and the public consequences of political vilification in politics and the media. That and much more, Mike, makes me want to ask about how whether there's a certain line of inevitability to the way journalism has moved from something that seemed so Edward R. Murrow-esque to something that is so much closer to the movie Idiocracy and, you know, or Max Headroom or any of these other futuristic things that don't paint a healthy picture of journalism's role in democracy. Do you sometimes share that sense of inevitability, or do you feel that these are things that come in waves in terms of the way, American journalism is functional for the American voter? Or am I just overthinking all of it?
Well, I think, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, right? So things come in waves, but there are similar patterns that, existed 110 years ago in some sensational journalism that exists now. And then there was a wave of more professionalized journalism where objectivity was king. And then news talk radio and conservative talk radio took off in the late 1980s and early 90s. And then cable television really took off with the advent of the Fox News Channel in the mid 1990s. Then we saw kind of a partisan break again, but we had a partisan media right at the founding. Papers literally had Democrat, in their name, or Republican in their name, as the Republican Party developed, about a half century, or a little more than a half century after that. So we've always had these waves of objective-focused journalism, partisan-focused journalism, sensational journalism, and that's still true now. There are plenty of folks doing amazing work that, would make, Murrow feel happy, right? And there's plenty of others who are doing things that basically are serving ratings and advertisers, but not much else.
I often wonder if you could only let Murrow see things and whether, his lights and wires in a box speech. And if you've never read or heard Edward R. Murrow's lights and wires in a box speech at the Radio and Television News Directors Association convention, I think in 57, you have to. It's just, and you'll say, my God, look what we've become. But you're right. There is still a lot of good that's out there. It's just that it doesn't have a stellar business model to do what it does. And so that's why you're seeing more models than ever, rather than just traditional advertising or just traditional subscribers. There's now more nonprofit roots, like we're seeing with, say, State's Newsroom, which has the Wisconsin Examiner here in Wisconsin. You have more of an underwriting model, which is behind Courier Newsroom, which is our parent company at Up North News. And so when you, again, talk about that, not just the Wisconsin media ecology, but the American media ecology, as I'd said earlier, it appears to be more complex than ever. And then even once you study it, what is the output? What is the output from the work that you do? And is it designed to inform Americans about journalism and democracy? Or is your output more toward fellow journalists in the way of saying, physician, heal thyself? Here's what we found, and here's maybe what you should do to be better.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, right? So part of our goal is to help citizens better understand why things are the way that they are and what, if anything, citizens themselves can do about it. And so some of our work is really focused on that. Other things that we do are more programmatic for journalists to help them cover For example, like a lot of the work we do helps journalists cover stories that are fact checks in ways that don't amplify the false claim, but amplify the verifiable truth. So that's what gets out there and starts flowing through the information ecology, rather than continuing to amplify the false claim in the fact check, which turns out to have really negative effects because we're all busy, right? People are listening to the show while they're driving to work, or they're, feeding a kid, or both, and so they're not going to give 100% of their focused attention to the news that they're consuming, most likely at any one given time. And so the information needs to be really clear. And if what journalists are doing are amplifying false claims and then saying, oh, but that's not true, it's pretty easy to miss the, oh, but that's not true. So instead, we work with journalists on how to tell stories that kind of center the truth. We'll mention, hey, there's this person, in many cases, the former president, who says this thing that's not true, but let's really focus on how we know that's false, and let's spend more time on that information. So some of what we do is for citizens. Some of what we do is to work with journalists and also learn from them to understand the new pressures they're under as they're trying to do their really important jobs.
The quote that I use frequently, and I don't know if there's an original source for it. If you do, I'm going to learn something today. But the quote being that it's not a journalist's job to say, he says it's cloudy and she says it's sunny. It's the journalist's job to open the damn window and tell you who's right. Which is not the case in every news story, obviously, but there are times when it is. And that is, I use that cliche, if you will, as a way to wage war against the scourge of both sidesism, which is just a way of, again, amplifying knowingly bad information. But to get at that, again, requires a certain degree of training. Now, anybody can create a website, anybody can create something and say, I'm a journalist. And then there's other people that go through the whole program. But again, whether you're talking in Wisconsin or elsewhere, you have journalists who are masterful, who have years or decades of training, but oftentimes in small markets, like the kind I've worked in with much younger reporters fresh out of school, it's not that they're intending to be bad, to engage in both sidesism or things like that, but the viewer does not know that the experience level of their local reporters is not what it would be in, say, a larger city or for a different publication. And that doesn't do the viewer or the reader a lot of favors.
That's right. I think back to my own first job out of college covering politics in Peoria, Illinois. I think I was 21 or 22 years old. And yeah, I worked hard. I tried my best to tell the verifiable truth to the audience at every chance I had. But I didn't know the history of politics in a city I had moved to 2 days before I started working. And so like those things take time. And so, one great thing about local journalism is that there tend to be people who spend their careers in a community and learn a lot about it. On the other hand, that has a lot of advantages of historical storytelling and putting things into context. On the other hand, it sometimes can limit the imagination of missing big changes that are coming because people are used to what's always been true and they might miss the new big thing. And so it's probably healthy for newsrooms to have a mix of folks with varying levels of experience. But as you say, sometimes the less experienced journalist will miss things in context just because they don't have the benefit of having lived in a place for 20 years and know what people mean when they say X, Y, Z. It's like a knowing if, when a Southerner says, bless your heart, they're not telling you to bless your heart. They're insulting you, but that's something you wouldn't know if you don't spend time there,
Right. The story I love to tell, one of my, before I left TV 13 in 2005, and I was starting to get a little bit frustrated with some of the younger folks coming out of school, because one of my favorite things to say to new reporters when they'd come through is they say, well, what can I do today? Might be their second day on the job or their third day on the job. And they're like, what can I do today? And I would say, get lost. I mean, literally, just drive around town, learn street names, whatever. And I had a rather cocky young reporter who needed to be sent to a story in Carson Park. And he said, well, what's the street address? And I said, Carson Park, which anybody local knows is the great big park in the middle of town. But he's like, no, I've got a GPS. Remember, GPSs were pretty new back then. And he's like, if you just give me the street address, I can find it. I'm like, if you can't find Carson Park right now without a GPS, this is not going to work out well for you. And that, again, there is no substitute for simply, learning where you are and who you're dealing with. But there's another condition behind some of these local newsrooms that I think is worth getting into. And frankly, opens up for you if you you know, have any concerns or about what we're doing with Up North News and some of these other newsrooms. But it's been a concern of mine forever that there are newsrooms where you might have a well-intentioned reporter or a trained news director or editor, but they have either a publisher or a station manager who does not want to rock the boat. And there are plenty of times where a news consumer does not know that their product is being influenced by what's covered or what the omissions are because of a publisher or a station owner or something like that. So part of, you know, our starting Up North News and Courier Newsroom and certainly some other outlets is to say that, you know, we are engaged in journalism, we're engaged in fact-based journalism, but we're also going to stand for something. You're going to know where our values are. It's going to be a case of, like when I was in the legislature, you can say to me, what's going on with this? And you may not agree with everything I say, but you know I will never lie to you. And that's a bit of trustworthiness that is different than what newsrooms used to look like. I wonder if you think that that is a positive or an okay development, or if that's something that actually troubles you about newsroom proliferation in the digital age.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword. When newsrooms expressly and consistently remind the audience of their values, I think that that transparency is a really good thing. People then know you're telling us you're coming from this particular perspective, or you're going to highlight the verifiable truth over a pure distillation of what both sides say, or you're going to say, you know, our orientation is a democracy-oriented frame, and if things are harming democracy, we're going to cover it negatively, right? So I think those things matter and are good. It's when news organizations pretend that they're objective but aren't that we see problems. And we also, as you were kind of alluding to, who owns the news matters a lot. Large corporate chains that own news organizations are more likely to cover politics as a game, are more likely to cover politics negatively, and are more likely to cover politics sensationally. Whereas smaller ownership companies or the mom and pop owners are way more likely to cover issues. They're way less likely to be unnecessarily negative. And so who owns the station matters a great deal. Journalists aren't dumb. They know how to get ahead in the newsroom they're in. They know what their news director likes. They know what the publisher likes. And so they're going to, you know, be incentivized to tell stories that that help their careers. And so who owns the station is something that's really important to pay attention to.
Let's wrap up with, as we began, with journalism and democracy. And what I say often is I can't believe we're having to talk about this, about the need to defend democracy, yeah. the need to buttress it. But this is the world that we live in right now, where we have people who maybe didn't set out to be seen as, you know, against democracy, but that certainly is how their actions have portrayed them. And a lot of journalists, a lot of newsrooms were hesitant to go out and say as much, but, you know, their actions don't lie. Is this condition getting better for newsrooms to essentially be pro-democracy without being accused of having a political leaning?
I think it depends on where you place the bar, right? If the bar is, are many national and local news outlets doing a better job of saying Joe Biden is the indisputable winner of the election and the person who gets more electoral votes is the person who is the president, I think most news organizations are doing a very good job. And they're doing stories where they'll say, you know, someone wants Wisconsin to, you know, overturn their electoral votes, or someone is saying Donald Trump won, but that's not, they can't overturn their electoral votes and Trump did not win. And not, you know, some people say Trump didn't, but being more assertive, I think that has been good. Other kinds of bars that we might think about for democracy, like who has access to the polls, how long they might have to engage in early or absentee voting, those sorts of things, I think newsrooms are still pretty reticent to take a pro-democracy side and just say it's better if more people have more opportunity to show up and vote, which it is. But newsrooms have a hard time, I think, saying that without sounding like they're favoring one party or another.
Which is a bit unfortunate, but again, this is constantly changing, and I hope we get a chance to talk about it again soon. Professor Michael Wagner, thank you so much for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Have a great day. Again, it's primary election day in Wisconsin. Polls are open until 8 o'clock. We will be back to wrap up this hour in just a moment. You're Up North.